Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Another episode of Musicals Taught Me Everything I Know. It's a show where we talk about musicals and all the wonderful lessons that we learn from watching them, being in them, listening to them, and listening to a podcast about musicals where we learn lessons about the musicals. I need to stop now.
It's a circle. It's just a big circle.
It is. It's never ending. I'm trying to fill extra time to, you know, get through the music, because we do only have two hosts at the table today.
Yeah.
It is myself, Miranda Selwood. You would know me from such episodes as most of them. And
Zane C. Weber from some of the others.
Yes! We're so good at this. And I'm so pleased and excited and happy to be welcoming back one of our favourite people and guests. Melissa, how are you?
I am doing lovely today.
Melissa comes to us via the Zoom application all the way from Chicago, which I believe is in Illinois.
You are correct.
Do you know Illinois. Where I learnt that?
Where?
From a musical called Victor Victoria and a great song called Chicago, Illinois. Sometimes in that show and various other places, it's pronounced Illinois. Is that just...
That's incorrect. That's just wrong.
That's what I thought.
Is it just... Yeah. Is it like a running joke?
Is
like
it a gag?
Like someone used to pronounce it that way and they're like referring to that person? Or is it just like, oh, we needed to rhyme with foist, so we're...
I think they needed it to rhyme.
Okay. All right. So don't listen to the mispronunciation of the word Illinois in
unless
some recordings.
Unless you're going to do your research about why it's mispronounced that way.
And if you do that research, please let us know, because we're wondering. Now, we have met you recently and done the Getting to Know You quiz with you recently. So we're not going to do it again, even though it's our usual second episode. We, you know, double check the answers. But since it was so soon, we're going to skip to the next, which is when we, the hosts, cast the guest in what we think would be their dream role.
Well, no, what is our dream role for them?
For them. Yes, that's right. That's what I was trying to say. You should take notes. You absolutely should. So, Zane, go first. Well, I think.
Wow. Okay, yeah. So, well, Melissa and I met doing Guys and Dolls.
And she was amazing and fabulous and perfect for that role.
Yes, the end. I think
Sarah Brown, by the way.
Yeah, sorry, as Sarah Brown. I think you could play that for at least another decade or so. You are still quite the spring chicken. however, I would also love to see you take on Eliza Doolittle.
Oh, yes.
I would love to play Eliza.
And like very, I don't think they're that similar of a casting type, but I would love to see your take on Eliza.
The thing that I love about Melissa, now, hi Melissa, I know you're listening.
Hi. This is the best pick me up ever.
Much like Eliza Doolittle and the track of that character, Melissa has this amazing breadth to be really classy and beautifully you know, poised. Mm, that's a perfect word for it. But is also, you know, does brashy and rambunctious and fun. She has an amazing energy. So to be able to perform through that entire breadth in a show like My Fair Lady would make it such a perfect role. It's about time Eliza was a redhead.
I agree.
I agree.
She was a redhead in the most recent Broadway revival.
Good. Sorry, okay. I'm getting really passionate about this. I would also love to see Melissa, maybe when she's aged a little more, as Dolly in Hello Dolly.
Nice.
Ooh,
I think that's a role that would really sit in your wheelhouse.
Dolly traditionally is like mid to late 30s, right?
Yeah, she's not elderly.
She's not an older character.
But she does need to be past the debutante.
Yes, she's been married and had that pass. But yeah, so I don't think it's that far away.
Yeah, and I just want to see her in that fabulous dress and a giant hat.
I know, I was like, can I just have the big red feather dress? That's all I want.
And the entrance down the stairs, of course.
Yeah, yeah. I think pretty much anything that Bette Midler has played would be fabulous for Melissa. But you're more of a soprano than Bette Midler's usual belty types, right?
Yes. Yeah. I definitely live in like the mezzo land. Like I can sing low, but it hurts.
Oh no.
Well, we don't want to hurt you, so
no.
Soprano roles for the win. So are you happy with that casting, Melissa?
Yes, I am quite happy with this casting. I have something for now and something for later.
Have you got another dream role you can share with us?
I mean, it kind of, because it just closed on Broadway, so I might have my chance, but anything in Mean Girls. Preferably not the mom track, because I will eventually play that track. I would like to be a teenager first in it.
Please.
And so now that it's left Broadway, I'm like, regional theater? Maybe. Slap some makeup on me. I could pass.
You absolutely can. And even on Zoom, you're passing right now. So congratulations. Looking good. How quickly does that transition happen? A Broadway show closes and then it becomes available for... It moves into regional tour and then amateur.
So there's a regional tour already going down of Mean Girls. So I think it might only be like maybe another year or so before... Because the show closed on Broadway before it recouped its original investment, I assume. Otherwise, I feel like they would have made a big deal about it. So most likely they're going to try and get as much money out of it as possible. Plus, you know, every college in the country is going to want that show easily. So like I see it could hit regional little equity theaters within the year. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, something to look forward to.
Yeah. I wish we had a little bit more of that model in Australia.
The dream.
We tend to get shows that do a national tour. That's our equivalent of the Broadway run.
Yes.
And then we wait a very long time for them to become available for amateur rights. And there's very little in between like the equivalent to the regional tour or smaller equity shows like they have in the States.
And sometimes the rights for the national tour are bought up and held in stasis. And so the amateur is put off and put off and put off. But enough about the perils of doing theatre in Australia.
But you guys got like Wicked and Rent and Les Mis already. So, meh.
Well...
That was a while ago, just to be clear. We've had those shows for a while.
We've never had them. Like, COVID has kind of forced theatres to do things a bit weirdly in the next couple of years, I think. So we'll see what happens in Australia. But shall we move on?
Yes, we shall listen to a small piece of music. And then we're going to talk about the show that has been brought to us today. Annie, Get Your Gun. Okay, here we are, ready to talk about the fictional story based on the life of Annie Oakley. Annie Oakley was a real person, but this story is completely made up. It's very here's a character that has a lot of...
Here's a name that you recognize.
It's a tall tale.
It's a tall tale.
All these people existed, but...
So all of them did. And
yes.
And did the real Annie Oakley marry as she does in, or does she? It doesn't end with wedding.
Well, they don't get married at the end of the musical, but they're together at the end of the musical. Yeah. No, they got married and lived together for many, many years. In fact, I believe the real Annie Oakley passed away first and Frank Butler like passed away of heartbreak like 6 days later. Like they were very, very close.
They were genuinely in love.
Oh, yeah. And fun fact, Thomas Edison shot footage of Annie Oakley shooting.
I thought you were going to say Thomas Edison shot Annie Oakley.
He did not shoot Annie. But like she was like right at the turn of the century when moving pictures were starting to, he was experimenting with them. And so there is a moving picture of Annie Oakley shooting clay pigeons.
Wow.
Which is just cool.
We'll have to find it.
It's on their it's on her Wikipedia article.
There you go.
Okay, I'll link it look in it up, the show guys. Notes.
We'll link it in the show notes if you want to see the real life Annie Oakley. We almost have the real life Annie Oakley here in Melissa, who has done this show, is it three times? You've worked
three times.
On three different productions of Annie Get Your Gun. In which capacities?
So I performed as Annie Oakley in a production of the revival version. I was in the ensemble of a production that recreated the original show. And then I was also on the tech crew. I was the ASM for the 2010 Ravinia production starring Patti LuPone as Annie, which was rumored to be a pre-Broadway, like, should we see if this work idea, but it didn't go anywhere after that. But it was a lot of fun.
That's amazing. Patti LuPone. One step of separation right here.
That's it. Like we're famous.
She's
now.
Lovely. She is very kind. Yeah.
Aww.
She knows what she wants and she's not afraid to say it, but she's not crazy.
Oh, good.
As some people like to think. Yeah.
Good to know. You heard it here, folks.
I kind of wish she was.
Not crazy. Well, we're going to get into talking more about various productions and the numerous rewrites of this show that have happened and needed to happen over time. But first, let's do a plot in 2 minutes. Pick a version and go with it. Feel free to mix them up a little. however you see fit. I'm going to get the timer out. Here's my clock. I've got a 2-minute timer. Oh, I wish I had some like Annie Oakley gunshots for it to go off at the end.
If only.
No. Anyway, last time Melissa did this, she did it like succinctly and perfectly and under 2 minutes. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So
don't say that.
I mean,
well, you put this pressure on yourself.
Yeah, you've set the bar high. And
that was at like 4 a.m.
You're
so.
Expected to meet it. Okay, here we go. Are you ready? Annie, get your gun. Go.
All right. So Annie, Get Your Gun is based on the tall tale of Annie Oakley and Frank Butler. Put your minds in like the way oldie times. So Annie Oakley is a younger-ish person who is a sharpshooter. And she goes to a hotel to try and sell some of like the goose and things that she has sold or shot to the hotel to make money to feed her family. When she's there, she realizes that there's another sharpshooter in town named Frank Butler. And they've put out a $100 like cash prize for whoever can outshoot Frank Butler. Hotel owner is like, whoa, I'm going to make myself $100 today. And so he enters Annie into the competition. While waiting for the competition to start, Frank Butler walks in and Annie Oakley is like, and so she falls right for him. But Frank is all like, oh no, I prefer a lady rather than like Annie Oakley is filthy. She's got lots of stuff. She's got pants. She carries a gun. She is not the picture of a lady in that time period. So she's like, oh, and he's like, ugh. And so they go on, they come in and do the actual shooting match and she crushes him. And so Frank Butler was with the Buffalo Bill. Yeah, Buffalo Bill, Colonel Buffalo Bill. Yep, Colonel Buffalo Bill's Wild West touring show, which was super popular at the turn of the century. Buffalo Bill sees how good she'll be for the show. I think of it like a vaudeville sideshowy thing. So he has her come and join the show. They start doing the thing. As they do the thing, Frank Butler starts being like, oh, she's so sweet. She's so kind. She's so down to earth. And he starts falling for her. Now, the show is not making a lot of money. So Buffalo Bill is like, you know what's new and like crazy? A girl shooting. So we're going to debut this big fancy trick. And so Annie Oakley at the end of Act One is like, Frank, I want you to come see my trick. It's going to be amazing. And I just want you to be there. Frank sees it and goes, this is something I cannot stand. I cannot have my woman outshining me. And he leaves. And the end of Act One, she's devastated. Intermission. Everyone goes on tours. And so she does a tour of Europe and he does a tour of the US. They both meet up back in New York because both of their shows are losing money, but they think the other one just had crazy wild success. So then they hold this like big party to be like, hey, do you have money?
You're
do you have
trouble.
Money? I think we all have my time up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, keep going because I'm just
You're
enjoying
close.
It. So close.
So big party. And they're like, hey, do you have money? Do you have money? And then everyone's like, no, no one has any money. However, Annie Oakley does have a chest full of jewels that were all given to her for shooting prizes by all like the crown princes of Europe. So they decide to hold one last shooting match, and the winner of the shooting match gets the money. However, both of them decide to throw the match so that the other person wins, so that they can be together again and fall in love. And that's the end of the show.
Aww. So you've gone with the revival plot there, which, no?
No, that's the original. The revival plot has a whole subplot that I didn't even touch.
In the original, is it not only Annie that throws it, throws the last contest?
It throws all over the place. I guess in the original, it changes, I feel like. In the first one, Annie was the one who threw it. In like the next one, Frank threw it. And then in the next revival, they both threw it.
And it was a tie.
I think that's kind of the version everyone goes with now because it's just sweeter.
Yeah, I do have some problems with the whole concept of right at the start, Annie sings a song saying you can't get a man with a gun. It's a great song. Great song. It talks about like you can shoot ducks and drag them home, but you can't shoot men and drag them home to be a husband.
Yeah, I mean, you can, but they won't be your husband. Like, you're not dragging the duck home to marry them, Annie.
But that's her point, right? So this, it's a cute song, and it kind of makes sense even in the context of the time in which it's set. But then throughout the show, you know, she gets prettier and more ladylike in looks, at least, although she's still down to earth Annie on the inside.
She learns to read.
She learns to read, which is amazing. And it's not until she changes herself into the thing that he wanted that he then becomes interested in her. And then she starts to excel and outshine him. So he throws a tantrum and leaves. And then when they meet up again, he's like, oh, I guess I like you now because you're terrible at your job again.
Yeah.
It's, you know, she has to throw the contest to win the man because you can't get a man with a gun. You can't be good at what you do to attract a man. You have to be submissive
You can be good at what you do. You just have to be not as good as the man.
Or what you do needs to be cooking and cleaning, which
I think we are getting into lessons.
Yeah. So
I will say, though, this is where the show differentiates extremely from the historical record. The historical record is that they met at that shooting match and were married within a year. So, and then they toured together, and Frank actually stepped aside and became more of her manager so that Annie could be the star. So, like, that's where, like, the musical and the original life are very, very different.
So why not make a musical about that great real story?
Yeah.
Like, I think... So this was written in the 40s. I believe that they had to convince Irvin Berlin to do it. So originally he was a bit like, they had somebody else on in line to write the music. And who wrote? I really should have looked it up before.
I'm looking it up right now. Dorothy Fields.
Yeah, Dorothy and Herbert Fields were writing the lyrics and the book. So Dorothy Fields was writing the lyrics, and then Dorothy and Herbert were writing the book together. And they were talking
to... Looks like to,
They asked Jerome Kern to do it, but then Jerome Kern got really sick.
And died, yes.
thank you. I thought really sick was enough, but Jerome Kern died, and he was not killed by...
I don't want to give him a bad rap for passing on this show.
So they were going to ask Irving Berlin to do it, and at the time he was saying, oh, well, I'm really used to just writing songs that are just songs that then you write a plot around and shove into things. Show within a show kind of songs. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I feel about writing...
A story musical.
Musical theatre. Like that we as we know it today, rather than that music hall concept of here's a funny song.
I don't want to change.
Yeah, so he was concerned about writing songs for particular situations within the plot, but in the end agreed to do it, and Dorothy Fields stepped back from writing the lyrics at that point, so she was just working on the book. And she did that very deliberately to say, I know Irving Berlin likes to do both, so I'm just going to be over here if he needs me because we want him to do it. And that had a lot
just
to do with...
Just like Annie Oakley.
Just like Annie Oakley. Oh, dear.
So the show opened in 1946 on Broadway and soon did tours quite quickly in other places. So this was a time in musical theatre history where shows did Broadway or West End and immediately
were everywhere.
Yeah. So we even got an Australian tour in 1947. We had it here the year after.
Yeah. Wow.
And I imagine that in 1947...
Well, plus it's right at the end of World War II. Yeah. Like World War II ended in 46. So like this is all like right in the middle of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, it is. Anyway.
Like that's a lot of producing work to like try and put this all together while the earth is trying to like repair itself after a world war. They're like, let's bring the show everywhere.
Well, Broadway was doing great guns during particularly the last half of the World War, the Depression right through because, you know, people needed it. They needed escapism and the hope and joy that Broadway gave them. But my point is, I feel like this show in 1947 in Australia would have done really well.
Gangbusters.
Yeah. Because of the way it portrayed those characters and those roles. It says, here's a rambunctious,
dirty. In rural Australia, like this would be really well received.
I just can't deal with the sexism.
No, well, and I think that's part of the point.
And the racism, which became so problematic. Yeah. So that was the original production in the 40s. The film came quite soon after in 1950. So it is like almost exactly the stage show. Is that fair?
I believe so. Yeah. I believe so. And then who is it? It's Betty Hudson who's in the movie.
Yes.
But it was Judy Garland.
Ooh.
Judy Garland was the original, and she did some tests. There is footage of her doing a couple of the numbers that exists in the internet. But I think I was right when things were starting to really go south for her, so she had to pull out of it.
She was going through her period of exhaustion.
Mm-hmm.
Exhaustion. I'm so exhausted. I actually can't imagine Judy Garland in that role.
But it would be an interesting...
It would be Judy Garland as Annie Oakley. Yeah. It wouldn't be Annie Oakley.
Yeah. Yeah. So they went with a relative newcomer I am going to find her actual name.
Betty Hutton. Mm-hmm.
Betty Hutton.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I was close.
Yeah. So she was a Broadway performer. And when you watch the movie, you can really see that exaggerated stage presence. But fantastic voice.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also important to note that this show came out before microphones existed. So all of these songs were sung to the back of houses without amplification.
I guess, anything you can do, I can do better would be great without a microphone, I think. Because you'd really actually be competing.
Yeah. And who opened the original product? Who's the original?
Was it Ethel Merman?
Annie, get your gun.
Merman. Who came back 20 years later to do the first revival.
What?
Yeah, so 46 and 66.
And that was when they did a bunch of rewrites then, but they still
They did a few rewrites, but the 99 revival really changed it. This one, they just like sort of tweaked it. And it's hard because there's not a lot of footage of the original show that exists or like scripts. Everything's of that 66 revival.
Yeah.
So that still had the extremely racist Indian
I'm an
dance,
Indian too. Yes.
And I'm
it was
Indian
still
too,
there in the 60s.
In the 60s. But that was about the time when people started thinking, hey, maybe that's not okay. And in fact, a lot of Native Americans were very upset about it.
I believe there was like picketing and boycotts.
Yeah, they were protesting during that Broadway run.
Well, the only other person that I can find of the original cast to come back for the revival was Harry Balliver as Chief Sitting Bull.
Yeah.
Very clearly not an Indigenous American. So that is, I mean, I think that pretty accurately describes what they were looking at when they were casting that. It's like, it's not, they're not going for sensitivity or like anything like that. Yeah.
But it was a period of time, that mid to late 60s, going into the 70s, where all of this started to become, you know, a focus.
I think the civil rights movement really pushed the concept of race and how race, racial equality forward. And so it started to be something that people thought about.
Yes.
In the like broader sense.
And I think, I don't know, it could have been very easy for this show to just, you know, dive under the covers at this point and never be seen again. So it's interesting that it got picked up. And we were saying before, I think it's on virtue of the music in this show. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you sing There's No Business Like Show Business, even people who have no idea what Broadway is know that song.
Even people who have never seen Annie Oakley know that song. But perhaps people who saw a completely different film called There's No Business Like Show Business would know that song. So if you're wondering... you know, where you might have seen it, even though you've never seen this particular show, that's where it is. And that was classic Irving Berlin, just throw songs in everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it wasn't just Berlin. Like, it was the style of the time.
It was the style of the time, correct.
I was listening to the score earlier today and I was like, oh, I forgot about so many of these. The Moonshine Lullaby. And like, there's so many just good. I Got the Sun in the Morning and the Moon at Night. Like, there's so many classic songs sitting in this that became just like pop tunes of the era.
They did. They did. Is this a big chorus show?
Yes and no. Like, there are a few big chorus numbers. It's definitely more of a chorus show in the revival when they added a secondary plot that was very like, we're the dancing secondary couple who sings two numbers while there's dances. But like, it's definitely a show that like probably had a singing chorus and a dancing chorus to it. Cause like, I Got the Sun in the Morning and the Moon at Night is a huge dance and musical number, but most of the show is sung by Frank and Annie. So
it does seem that way. Yes. There are occasional moments, I think, where the chorus chimes in and I think that seems really unnecessary. So there's one early on, a number that Frank sings and he's singing it. Oh no, maybe it's the end of Act One. He's singing this.
Said, I'm just a bad, bad man.
Oh.
Or the girl that I marry.
No.
My defenses are down.
My defenses are down. That's the one. She's on it. Where he's singing it, it's a solo. It has words that say a thing and he appears to finish the song. And oh, no, here's another verse where a random bunch of cowboys are now singing with him.
Random bunch of cowboys.
Yep. Look, no reason.
Come on.
I mean, they were all just listening to him. They're just reiterating his thoughts.
Your defenses are down. You're right, buddy.
It's like, I can tell your defenses are down. And that's okay.
Yeah, I don't know if that's what they're saying.
I don't know. I don't think so.
So the big thing that the revival in the 90s did was readdress the American Indian plot lines and take out that song. So where that song appears in the original... what's happening in the show?
It's actually right at the Act One finale. So this is based on a true story. So Chief Sitting Bull did adopt Annie Oakley as his adopted daughter, which is lovely. So it's the end of Act Two or end of Act One, right after Annie Oakley did the big shooting trick and Frank is like, oh no, I'm sad. In the original, all of a sudden Chief Sitting Bull comes in and is like, hey, you're going to be my daughter now. Let's do a big celebration. And then that was the end of Act One. And so when that got removed, all of a sudden the end of Act One becomes Annie Oakley singing There's No Business Like Show Business and like kind of being like, what do I do? And that's then the end of Act One, is she sees him leave and like it's a little bit more of a like, ah, what do I have to, like, I have show business now, but I've lost this. So, like, it becomes a lot more poignant in without it.
Yes.
And a lot less racist.
Yes. Yes. And if you do want to see that song and be horrified by it, it is in the film. But I can see how it would have been a fun, culturally interesting moment in the original show. Just looking at it with a modern eye, it's completely inappropriate. So I'm glad it's gone. Any other fun facts about Annie Get Your Gun? Oh,
so as someone who played Annie, the shooting tricks is, I think, part of the funnest part of the show. Like, I learned how to twirl pistols. Annie Oakley makes her entrance on stage by shooting the bird off of a character's hat. And so normally what it is that you have the bird attached to the hat, but it's sitting on a mouse trap. And that mouse trap is attached to fishing line. And so the actress who's wearing the hat would just go, on the, when the bang happens and pull the cord, and the bird will go flying off the hat. And then Annie Oakley walks on stage. Like, it's like, there's a lot of just like fun things that happen in that show that you don't normally get to do.
Yeah. I was going to ask her, what is her big trick that she does on stage?
So in the revival, the trick is, it normally involves balloons. So like, people either have like balloons on their hats with a pushpin, or what we did is like, they held the balloons on their forehead and then they had a pushpin in their other hand and they would shoot it. But it's normally involves some sort of balloons that get popped.
So not like the film where she's riding a horse, standing on it, shooting things.
Correct.
Yeah, because I imagine that would be difficult to reproduce on stage.
Yeah. They had me sit in a big platform thing that they were spinning while I shot stuff. So
now, this is an idea that's just come into my head, but has anybody ever thought about doing the Arena Spectacular production of Annie Get Your Gun with like horses and...
I mean, it would really lend itself well.
I know.
Because it's got the big spectacle.
Yes.
And imagine you could do all the like the clay shooting and stuff. Yeah.
Okay. Well, practice your shooting skills, Melissa, because we're going to get you in to do the Arena Spectacular of Annie Get Your Gun. I have not looked for a bad review without Julie, because she's not here. And I kind of don't want to.
No,
because I think I know what it's going to say.
I think we know what it's
going to
say.
And we've already addressed it.
So perhaps we should just move on to lessons.
Okay, let's move on to the lessons we've learned from Annie Get Your Gun.
I think the funniest one...
That's okay. We forgive you. What is the funniest one?
All right. So the first song that Annie Oakley sings in the show is called Doing What Comes Naturally.
Love
because
that song.
Because the hotel guy's like, how do you know how to shoot? And she's like, well, when my mom and pa, they would just go behind a tree and they were doing what comes naturally. And this is just doing what comes naturally to me. And it's just, and it's Annie, and then it's three kid actors singing a whole song about doing what comes naturally. And it's just all these veiled metaphors for things. It's great.
For things, in inverted commas.
Yes.
It's a great song, truly is.
It is, though.
It's a bit of a list song, which I think was a very popular form at that time, that 30s and 40s musicals have a lot of these, where they say, here's a funny joke, and now I'm going to give you 20,000 examples of why it's funny. But it never gets old for me. I just love it. I love it. Okay. So we've learned about doing what comes naturally. We also learned that you can't get a man with a gun.
I mean, a lot of the titles of the songs are
lessons right
lessons
there.
Right there.
I do think the sun in the morning and the moon at night is a nice one, because it's how, like, even if I don't have diamonds or I don't have pearls or I don't have a yacht, if I have the sun in the morning and the moon at night, things are going okay. Like, yeah. Life keeps moving on, which is, that's nice.
That's a good philosophy.
Mm.
A good one to take away. I guess I learned in a roundabout way about Annie Oakley, who, you know, truly was a Wild West hero of the Americas.
As someone who got into musical theater later than most people, I would say, I did not know that she was a real person. I only knew of her from the movie and the songs. So yeah, I learned about Annie Oakley from the musical and the movie, I guess.
Yes, you did.
Mm.
I feel like there's not a lot of musicals that are based on just like a historical figure.
Hamilton.
That are this sexist.
All
I mean,
right, yes.
Hamilton. But like, Hamilton, I feel like, covers a whole, like, concept of the creation of the country.
Yes.
While this is, like, one person's life journey. Because even 1776, even though it is, like, about a historical event,
Barnum.
It really is about that event rather than this show's really about her life and her journey.
Yeah.
It does. I mean, we are getting more, like, bio-musicals using the music of those people.
But... Yeah, those don't count.
Thank you. Well, thank you.
It's
I
a
agree.
Very different form. And that's the difference between... having a bio musical where you say this is this person's life, and we changed a few things to make it work artistically, but you know, it's based on their life. Here's a character that we know and love, and we've written a musical about this character. Like it's a little bit more sort of we're reinventing her story.
Yeah, this isn't her story, but it's got a name in it.
Yeah, and we've like back then, it was either like you did a show based on a play or based on a book. And like that's what a lot of things were, or based on like someone's personal memory. So I think it's interesting that this is one of the first times that we see someone take like, this is a historical story and I'm going to turn it into a show without having like a book or a play to pull it from.
Yeah. I learned that Rodgers and Hammerstein had their fingers in a lot of pies. This production was produced by Rodgers and Hammerstein.
When was Oklahoma? 43
just
or
before
44?
It. Just before it. So they've coming off the success of Oklahoma, they had some cash lying around, I guess, and they began self-producing. So from that point on, rather than go to a producer and say, here's our show, let's do it together, they started producing their own work themselves as the Rodgers and Hammerstein Company. And at that same time, they started producing other people's work. And I never knew that until I started reading about this production and how it came about. And it was produced by... Rodgers and Hammerstein. So there you go.
I learned that right now.
So many lessons. I think there's some lessons to be learned in here about even if it's a little bit of a, gee, I'm looking at this and it isn't really happening the way I agree and accept, about being yourself and not really having to change to be loved and accepted. And again, I come back to this thing of I don't understand why they took a real story where that was the case and turned it into a, at that time, more socially acceptable, but now not at all.
They greased it up.
Format of, yeah. I think it might also be a little bit of they wanted to make her pretty.
Oh, sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, back then, how many big, big stars did you see play a non-beautiful character for a while on a show?
Yeah, true.
That just wasn't done.
No. And then... there's a montage in the film of her doing a lot of things to make particularly her skin look nicer. So when she starts at the start of the film, she's freckled. And these are like dark spots. And within the first tour, which I assume was a few months or maybe a year, she's managed to scrub them off with lemons. So...
Yeah, that's not in the actual musical. That's a movie thing.
That's a movie thing, yeah, that montage. But from watching the film, I learned that you can scrub freckles off with lemons, apparently. Apparently.
I mean... This is probably bleaching, but yeah.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
And then she has this beautiful, like, peachy skin.
I'm not sure that it would have that exact effect.
You have years of skin hardened by the sun. Just rub a little lemon on it.
Yeah.
There you go.
Just rub a little lemon on it. You heard it here. That'll fix it.
Any more lessons that we learned from Annie Get Your Gun?
Irving Berlin is a genius. And if you do nothing else after this, go listen to the score and read about the actual Annie Oakley.
Good advice.
The longevity of Ethel Merman's talent, like doing the same role 20 years apart, and it is technically like a very energetic role.
Yeah.
You're the only person
I think of in modern day who could do that, just pick up a role 20 years later and do it again.
Patty
LuPone.
Mm.
Company.
Yeah.
Company. Yeah. God.
Patty.
Man. This is a great showcase role for a fabulous female performer. And as we were saying before, has this reputation as this brassy, brash character. But she does get some lovely, love songs.
I got
songs.
Lost in His Arms at the top of Act Two. It's just her sitting on a trunk on a boat singing about how, like, what love feels like. Because she didn't know what the concept of love was until Frank explained it to her earlier in Act One, that she didn't have words for that feeling because love wasn't a thing in her life yet.
That's so sad.
But then she learned and it was beautiful.
It was beautiful. You would have been amazing in this role. I would have loved to see you in this role because that's the breadth of your beautiful character. And on that note, let's talk again. About...
I'm holding on to the Ethel Merman 20
years
later.
You can
do it
20 years later. let's move on to casting. I'm going to dream cast Melissa Crabtree in the Arena Spectacular production that we'll be doing soon.
How is your horse personship?
I was thrown off a horse as a kid and never kind of went back.
Well,
but I would learn
back.
For this. I would learn.
And I'm going to confidently cast Zac Efron as your Frank.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
I accept.
I just think it would be great for publicity.
I mean, Frank isn't a deep character. I think he would be perfect for.
Yeah, it's a very superficial
Frank,
character. I was like, it's a little deep of a voice. Like, it's traditionally that like rich baritone, but I'm sure he has it by now.
Yeah, sure. Of course he does.
And
he
if
can
not,
do anything.
We'll just dub him like they did in the first movie. So.
Yeah, we'll just dub him.
In the Arena Spectacular. I think dubbing a live performance would be interesting.
I have a bit of a weird pick for Annie.
Yes.
Just a regular one. Now, it would have to be a younger version of this person because she's probably aged out of it now, Ethel Merman notwithstanding. I would like to see Megan Mullally play Annie.
Oh, yeah. She could still do it.
She definitely could. I think she would struggle to play a young woman.
Maybe.
But I would love to see Megan Mullally. Just the energy that she has and kind of the fire that she brings to her roles.
Speaking of Megan's, Megan Hilty has played it, and I'm sure that was amazing. But that was in a semi-staged or concert version. Mm. So I'm also going to put her up for the next Broadway revival, I suppose.
Oh, I think Ashley Park would be fantastic. This.
Context for me for Ashley Park.
Original Gretchen in Mean Girls. She was also Tipton in the King and I revival. She was supposed to be Millie in the Thoroughly Modern Millie revival at the Kennedy Center in April this past year. They were rewriting that script to address AIDS racist issues. And I think she'd be great because she's got the funny, but she's also got this stunning voice.
Yeah.
And just like, yeah, I think it'd be my pick.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, that'd be great. How about some more Franks? Do we have any more romantic leads to play a gunslinging Frank Butler?
Channing Tatum.
Who's actually very fancy.
Channing Tatum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And tall. They gotta be tall.
So tall. Dolly Tate.
Dolly Tate?
Is the...
flamboyant showgirl sidekick who thinks that Frank loves her. She's like the opposite of Annie. But
any ideas?
Not all there.
Oh.
So.
I think Megan Hilty would rock that too.
Yeah, I mean, yes.
And basically anyone who's played Dolly in Hello Dolly could probably just transfer straight over to a Dolly Tate.
The character does almost nothing, so it could realistically
just
be played
by just has to look
super
fancy.
I mean, a young Bernadette would be great there as well. Like
Bernadette Peters has played Annie Oakley.
It's true, she has. But I was just thinking, like, literally anyone who's played, the character
Dolly.
In Annie?
Miss Hannigan?
No, the
Grace
Farrell?
Oh, Grace Farrell.
Yeah.
Nice. Buffalo Bill, who is the slightly older gent who runs the show.
Vince D'Onofrio.
Okay. Mm.
Who's that? Patrick Page would be fun. It'd
Patrick
be fun to
Page
see him in a, like, a little bit more of a show busy role.
Yeah.
Rather than the I'm going to sing in the basement and be a villain.
There's a few more characters to fill out. Do we have any Chief Sitting Bulls? Like, I don't want to. I don't really know. I don't know.
Just gonna say no. I don't have one.
Yeah.
No. Just, you know, hold proper auditions and cast a suitably, you know, person.
Please. Anyone who's doing the show, just cast a person just suitably.
And if you don't have them, don't do the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept, Melissa. We'll have to get you on a special episode just to talk about that another time. I'm happy with that cast. Yeah. I'm happy to run with that.
I know, like, realistically in this show, it's all about having a really solid Annie and Frank that have fantastic chemistry and can hold a show on their own each. And then everybody else is really just the foundation for them to stand on and for them to have costume changes.
That's important. It's important to have costume changes.
Especially if you're going to get rid of all those freckles.
I know, right?
Lots of lemons.
So many lemons backstage. Let's move on to top five lists and see if we can fit the lemons in again.
Top five gunplay musicals.
It's this and Assassins. That's it.
There is. It's not like celebrated, but in I guess Miss Saigon.
Bonnie and Clyde.
Miss Saigon. Bonnie and Clyde. There's a lot of shooting in Bonnie and Clyde.
Very true.
Yeah. This is a great list.
I was like, these are fun.
Is Calamity Jane on that list?
She's
not known for shooting, but I'm pretty sure I've seen her wander around with a gun. But
that's the thing, like, gunplay is like having fun with guns.
See, but if you say that, then it's like guys and dolls can be in it because they're gangsters.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like the guns have to be important to the plot.
Okay. All right, sorry. I do get Calamity Jane and Annie Get Your Gun mixed up a lot because of the similarities of those two characters.
I'm going to say top five Ethel Merman performances.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Because she's the one that I listened to first and most recently. But also, like, when I think Ethel Merman, I think Annie Got You Gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this one more than I think her performance in Gypsy, which is her other, like, big one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly, Gypsy's also definitely on that list.
Certainly top five.
I mean, I would perchance to put this on a list of, like, top five show vehicle for women shows. Mm-hmm. So it's like this, Gypsy. Like, I feel like there's not as many shows where it's really the female title lead makes or breaks it.
Yeah. Wicked, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're more but
even then, it's
shows.
Two. Like, how many times is it like the single female carries the show?
Fair, yes.
In the like titular role. top five much needed rewrites.
Yeah.
Would you say top five improvements from original to revival?
Recontextualization.
Because they really did a lot. They even added like a show within a show and changed the opening number. And like they did a lot of work to it. So like it's definitely a lot better than it was. But
and the basic
it still could
story
use
is
like
same.
Another pass.
Yeah.
One more pass. Well, maybe we can look forward to that in the next... Oh, we'd be almost due for the next, you know, 20-year cycle of revivals for Annie.
Technically, we are due because it was 99.
Yeah, it's true, 99.
Well, let's get on to
it.
Well,
we were going to get Millie this year, and I feel like Millie's a little... Millie's just as bad, but, like, Millie at least is a little fresher in the...
Yeah.
We got a Kiss Me Kate revival instead, I think, happened.
Do you think it would make top five problematic musicals?
I do.
The original? Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Top five?
Based on that song.
Even based on...
But it's the combination of the racism and sexism that really get me. Get my goat. You know, it's not just one or the other. There's other shows like South Pacific where it has some cultural insensitivity, but at least...
It's addressed in that show and it's not addressed at all in this one.
Yeah. That's fair.
It's just the joke.
Yeah.
Boo.
Boo. let's hurry through some more top fives. Top five shows.
Top five rags to riches.
I don't know.
It's a fun costume. I mean, how often do you go from stage dirt to ball gown? Cinderella gets to do that. Oh.
Eliza Doolittle.
Yep.
That's pretty much it.
Dirt to ball gown. Yeah.
Dirt to ball gown. Top five.
Yeah.
I don't know how to say it, but There's No Business Like Show Business in the top five songs you didn't know came from
the
show
musical.
They came from. Yeah. So a lot of people know that from the movie There's No Business Like Show Business and various other iterations of the use of that song, but I don't know that it came from this.
Also, maybe even Anything You Can Do, I Can Do Better, because I knew that song before I knew this show.
Yeah. Was that also in that movie? I'm spitballing.
That movie.
There's No Business Like Show Business.
Oh, I have no idea. Okay. I'm sorry. I can't answer that question. All right. I just simply don't know.
Okay. I could look it up, but my arm is leaning on this chair, so can't reach my keyboard.
Listeners, if you know, please do our homework for us.
What other shows has... There's no...
I wouldn't put it in top five shows with kids. It was one of the first shows that had, like, actual kid characters in it.
Okay.
Which, that's kind of fun, but I don't... There's better ones now, so...
Yes.
Yeah.
This is pre The Sound of Music, which is always going to top that list, right? Or Annie on the top of that. Oliver, no.
With Matilda. Maybe some School of Rock.
There's a lot of much more... much better ones. Other top fives. Top fives.
Would
top
you
fives.
Put this top five Irving Berlin?
Yeah.
Because
this is his most famous one.
And it's White Christmas. His attempt at a story musical as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, The White Christmas, though, if we're talking just musicals, The White Christmas musical, it's okay. Yeah. Like, you love it because it's nostalgic. You don't love it because it's spectacular on its own.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Either way, it's still top five.
Yeah? You reckon?
Yeah. Cool. Done. Irving Berlin. Woo! He loved to write work with really American material. He was very proud American.
Very patriotic.
So I think that this would have been a good project for him, and it shows that he enjoyed
Maybe
it.
A top five Americana musical?
Yes.
Mm. Would Assassins be on that list?
Depends on whose Americana list we're making.
I would just like to ask, we did touch on it a bit earlier, but I'd like to ask both of you, because of your casting types, do you think that this would be on top five vehicles for a female performer to show off? Like, do you think that this would be like top five like roles? So like, if you're playing this, you get to really showcase what you're about.
Yeah.
Especially
if you're a belty comedian.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there are also like emotional beats.
Yes. But even those emotional beats are often shrouded in a comedic blend, you know? She's a character who was built to be laughed at and with.
Yeah.
And I think that almost emphasizes those emotional moments where she has realizations and feelings that, you know, don't fit in that
comedic box. Now, this
is
a question just for you. Do you think that Annie Oakley is a young drunk mother?
No, I don't.
You don't think that she grows up to be fun drunk mother?
No. Because she's not a party girl. She's not that kind of fun and rambunctious.
Yeah, but the drunk mother stereotype isn't a party girl either. It's more just kind of the older comedian role.
I guess. My question is there a correlation of Annie to Annie being the rambunctious redhead?
Annie. If Annie grew up and time
growing traveled. Up to be Annie Oakley.
I do believe that Audrey McCurl, or whoever the original Annie was, played Annie Oakley in some big productions
of
later
course
in
she
her
did.
Career.
Yeah.
I could definitely see that. Like, if time travel was involved, definitely, like, Annie could be Annie Oakley.
You just chalk it up. What's the next Annie after Annie Oakley?
I don't think there are any others.
I mean, well, there aren't any others called Annie, I don't think.
No.
But
Ryan. I mean, Dolly. Hello, Dolly.
Yeah, Dolly. Yeah. I think Dolly would probably be the next.
And then
or
Patty
does she
LaPone's
become
character in
him. Does she become Mama Rose?
Maybe.
Because she does. She gets into show business.
Yeah. Anyway, we've gone a little off point there. If we finish with top fives, then this is unfortunately the time when we have to say goodbye to our own Annie Oakley.
Oh.
Melissa Crabtree. Oh. Is there anything you've got coming up around or that you'd want to plug?
Well, I own a Broadway-themed stationery brand called An Actor Plans. So I got Cat stickers doing cat things on Broadway, which is very fun. You can find it at enactorplans.com.
I will vouch that these are adorable.
They are.
They are absolutely
adorable. And also, just to clarify, when Melissa says they're cats doing cat things on Broadway, she's not talking about Cats, the musical. She's talking about an awesome cartoon cat of her real cat, Mabel. Doing lots of different roles, and
the Hamilton set I think is still my favorite.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, it's pretty good. Yeah. I mean, King George says awesome now. So,
so if you love cats and Broadway, or even just one of those two things, get onto Enactor Plans and order yourself some super fun stuff. The planner thing is becoming pretty big.
Yes.
Yes.
I think especially after 2020, where all of a sudden there were no plans, everyone is very like, I will make plans, even if it is going to my couch and watching Bridgerton.
I'm going to keep them, and I'm going to put cute stickers in there so that I stick to it.
Yes. The other thing that you stock that I absolutely love is a set of planner stickers specifically for when you're in rehearsal, coming up to performances for a show, so they have lots of little things. So instead of having to write boring 10 rehearsal 7 to every Wednesday, and you know, for weeks at a time, you can just get this set and just stick these fancy stickers in it all over your planner, and then you'll be even more excited about going to rehearsal every day, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
sure. Absolutely.
And if you want to find Musicals Taught Me on the web, you know, after you've finished ordering your stuff on Enactor Plans, you can find us at thatsnotcanonproductions.com. We're also there with a whole bunch of other podcasts that are on the TNC network.
And more musical theatre podcasts.
And more musical theatre podcasts. Yeah. We started a trend. I don't know what to tell you. You can support us at patreon.com/musicals taught me everything I know. Send us a couple of bucks. We'll send you some extra content, including a whole lot more top five episodes, where we not only provide the top fives, but then argue about which ones are the best ones. We're on Facebook, Twitter, the usual places, and you can send us an email at musicals.taughtmepodcast@gmail.com. We'd really love you to subscribe, rate, and review if you're on iTunes or Spotify, and please share us with your friends. We love to make new friends and tell them all about musicals.
Yeah, like cope with there not being musicals to be in at the moment by thinking about musicals that you could be in the future.
Yeah. We also have a huge back catalogue, so if you've joined us recently, go back and find some
177 by this time episodes.
Our goal is to cover all the musicals ever.
That's a lot of musicals. We've made the list.
Yeah.
And there's about 560 left to go
at the moment, but they keep writing new ones, Zane.
We got a year before everything stops, so we could catch up.
Yes, that's right. I don't want to say we organized this, but.
Oof.
But there's a sunny side to every situation, and that is a lesson that I learned from 42nd Street, my favorite musical. And on that note, my name is Miranda. Zane has been with me today.
It's true. I'm here also.
Thank you to our guest, Melissa Crabtree, all the way from Chicago, Illinois, not Illinois. So long, farewell. Avida Zane.
Bye.
And goodbye.
Thanks, bye. Melissa.
I'm Dan Beeston.
I'm Gregoire.
And we're smart enough to know better.
We're a podcast of science.
What's the first question you ask? How do we get a baby drunk?
Comedy.
What's the best way to kill Jar Jar Binks?
And ignorance.
Household hydrogen peroxide is like 3% to 6% hydrogen peroxide. So you can drink 94% of any hydrogen peroxide and still be okay.
Search for Smart Enough to Know Better in your podcast-compatible device.
My master's just went down the toilet.
That's Not Canon Productions podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.